Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Speaking of the bright side of the road here on a Friday, joining me is Mr. Brightside himself, Kim Holmes. Kim, what is up?
Hey, baby. I'm a rich man. I got it right on Sunday.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Oh, hello, baby.
What'd you get right?
All of it.
Like, okay, so... Explain.
Well, we have 22 side bets, like the coin toss,
right,
and the first touchdown, first interception, longest run, longest pass, most yardage, all kinds of stuff like that. And I lost the coin toss, and that was about it. San Francisco won the coin toss,
yeah,
and then I won the major kahuna bet for who won the game.
Right. You guys bet that one.
But I was not expecting that
what?
To happen. We talked last week, and I thought for sure San Francisco was going to win, but Disco is from the Bay Area, so he picked the Niners. And third quarter, I says, I'm fucked. And then all of a sudden, he throws two interceptions.
Well, what?
And then all hell broke loose for the Chiefs.
6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, man. They're down by 10 points. And let me tell you, the guy who quarterbacks the Kansas City Chiefs, man, Pat Mahomes, he's a player, man. And I will tell you this, as a 49er fan, look, I don't blame, Jimmy Garoppolo's taking a world of heat. and when you get the big bucks and you play that position, right, that's the way it is, right? Put your big boy pants on. But you know what? Essentially, being a backup isn't the same as being a starter. And this is his first full season as a starting quarterback. And they get to the Super Bowl and they're within, 6 minutes of winning it, which is tough to swallow. But everybody got to learn. And the only way you learn is by playing. And so Pat Mahomes, this is what, third year as a starter in the
year.
Yeah, in the NFL. So, I mean, as a 49er fan, I was not one bit. It's not like the 49ers lost that game. The Chiefs beat them.
No. They just got beat.
Yeah, so it's not like, like the Dodgers and the Astros. Would you look at that and go, oh, my God. Like, it's like we got robbed, man, again, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
We was robbed and all that stuff. Yeah. It was a great game. It was tough to watch the end.
I thought so, too. Yep. Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mahomes got his pants pulled down the year before by Brady.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he came back and did the same thing to Garoppolo.
Right.
I think it was a good game. It was a great game, though.
I think that is the hardest position to play in sports. I mean, the speed of that game goes, the complexity of what they do, the speed of what it moves at. I mean, to me, and if you've ever tried to play that position, you're trying to figure out where people are going and what people are doing, and they're moving so fast. As a 49er fan, I mean, it was an awesome year and great days ahead. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I see the same game next year.
Yeah, well, yeah, it'll be good. well, Baltimore had a pretty good team, but their quarterback, right, he's got to make the same step that Jimmy Garoppolo's got to make is the same step that kid's got to make. And that's 2 years in a row in the playoffs, right? He's had pretty good regular season, and then I don't want to say been exposed in the playoffs because, you know, we talked about this in baseball, you know, that the playoffs aren't the same as the regular season. And if you use analytical data from the regular season in the playoffs, you're making a mistake. You need the data that you look at for the playoffs should be every pitcher that has, you know, your hitters, if you want to use analytical data, against every pitcher that has an ERA south of like 3.5. So only the good pitchers. Yeah. Look at that analytical data for your players, and you know, and so anyway, because it's not the same. I mean, everybody's faster, everybody's good,
that's true.
And so anyway, no. The speaking of that, the Dodgers are on the verge of landing the big Mookie Betts.
No kidding.
They're going to get Mookie Betts and David Price.
Wow. Yeah, and a new manager?
No, you're still going to have that guy right there. So Dave Roberts is still going to be the manager, man. But even worse than Dave.
Hey, a guy could dream, Kenny.
I know. Even worse than that, you're going to still have the same data guy up there. He's the one that you
probably the real problem.
Exactly.
For me is that data guy.
The hippie data guy up there telling everybody what to do. Well, the numbers say this. Yeah, you need to shut up right after the way you performed the last couple of years.
You need to smoke a joint and get out of my face.
But how about that? You know, the Dodgers, and you know, 12 months ago, Yasiel Puig in right field, and now it's going to be Mookie Betts, the AL MVP, when they complete that trade. And so, I guess the holdup is somebody's physical wasn't right, and they're. They're looking at something, but supposedly,
how about that?
Your Dodgers.
That could be good.
Yeah.
That could be good.
Yeah.
I just can't get too excited.
I know.
I've been tickled so long, I just can't get it up anymore.
You know, but come on, football's over, man.
Yeah,
Spring training's going to start.
Spring training starts.
The sun's going to come out, right?
Yeah, it'll be all right.
Favorite Kirk Douglas movie?
Favorite Kirk Douglas movie.
Yeah.
Probably the one where he and who was it? Colin Trapeze.
What?
I think with Tony Curtis and Burt Lancaster.
Well,
I think that was the movie. That was a good one. He did one with Burt Lancaster where they were just got out of jail, and then they robbed a train. They were train robbers, and they'd been in jail for 20 years. And they came out, and they tried to get the old gang back together, and they're all dead. And so these guys rob a train. And that was a pretty fun movie. But just about anything Kirk Douglas did was good.
The two movies that stand out in my mind was my favorite because he looks kind of – he looks like he was designed to play this part is in The Viking with Tony Curtis and is it Janet Leigh or who's the female?
Janet Leigh.
And they have a sword fight on the side of this castle, on this turret on the side, and Kirk Douglas has one eye, and Tony Curtis kills him because they wind up being brothers, right? They don't know it, but they're brothers, and Kirk Douglas has a chance to kill Tony Curtis, and he hesitates, and Tony Curtis kills him, stabs him, and kills him. And then, he rolls down all those stone steps, and then they put his body on a what do they call those Viking ships?
Oh, yeah. Where they set him on fire and yeah. send him out to Valhalla.
They do. They put him on one of those Viking ships. And, you know, there he is, torch. His body. And they shoot all these flaming arrows. And yeah. the boat's fully engulfed. And at night, it's something. It is so that's probably my favorite. Number two, though, and he doesn't play a good guy, but I mean he's unbelievable in the part, is From Here to Eternity. From Here to Eternity.
Oh, yeah. That was a good movie.
And he actually, I think, right, if I'm not mistaken, he gets accused of rape, and then does he commit suicide? How does Kirk Douglas die in From Here to Eternity? Here to Eternity.
Jesus, I don't know.
He's
the one Sinatra was in too.
Yeah, that's the one that you know.
And Ernest Borgnine.
That's the horse. That's supposedly the horse head part.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
That's from the movie The Godfather, right? That Sinatra thought he was perfect, and he was trying to reinvent his career. Right?
Yes,
and,
he was.
He's trying to reinvent his career.
That director says, no way.
No way.
He took the sweetest piece of ass I've ever had, and he ruined her. He'll never work in this town again. And then he wakes up with a horse head.
Is that right?
That was a good scene.
Yeah, it was his quarter horse too, right? His prize quarter horse.
Yeah. Khartoum was the name of the horse.
Khartoum, listen to that. So is it Janet Leigh? Oh, Deborah Kerr, Frank Sinatra. Listen,
Deborah Kerr was with Bert Lancaster on the beach.
Listen to the cast. From Here to Eternity, Burt Lancaster, Montgomery Clift, Deborah Kerr, Donna Reed, Frank Sinatra, Ernest Borgnine, Jack Warden.
Yeah. Jesus. Wow, that was a good movie.
Well, Kirk Douglas is in that movie, yes or no? Is he not in there? Am I thinking of Ernest?
I don't think he is. I think you're thinking of Burt Lancaster.
What movie is Kirk Douglas? Well, let me find the movie now. Maybe I'm thinking of Does Burt Lancaster die in that movie?
I think he does. All I remember, he and Deborah Kerr making out on the beach.
Beach, man. That was some big stuff, man.
Yeah, that was. I was about 16, I think.
But if you've never seen The Vikings, right? He plays.
I have.
He plays the role of Einar, right? But he was just well built physically guy, right? And with that glass eye, that thing over one of his eyes, he looked every bit.
And was it Tony Curtis that had one hand cut off?
Yep.
Can't remember.
Yeah,
one of them. And cut off.
And I'm looking at. Man, he had a pretty long career, man. He had a pretty long career.
I was watching a thing about him tonight. 88 movies he made.
88 movie. Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot of action, baby.
That is. That's a lot of movies. I mean, he was just one of those Hollywood, you know, golden guys, right? And he's married to the same woman his whole life, right?
Yep.
And so very much, you know, not a typical Hollywood guy. Kirk Douglas. Kirk Douglas. Do you know what his real name is?
God. I knew it at one time.
Isur, Issur, Issur Danilovich. Uh-huh. Danilovich.
Uh-huh. Danilovich.
No wonder he became Kirk Douglas.
I would have too.
After an impoverished childhood with immigrant yeah. parents and six sisters, he made his film debut in The Strange Love of Martha Ivers, 1946, with Barbara Stanwyck.
Wow.
Douglas soon developed into a leading box office star through the 1950s, known for serious dramas, including westerns and war films. In his career, he appeared in more than 90 films. Douglas was known for his explosive acting style, which he displayed as a criminal defense attorney in Town Without Pity in 1961. I get as an actor and philanthropist, Douglas received 3 Academy Award nominations, an Oscar for his lifetime achievement, and a Presidential Medal for Freedom. As an author, he wrote 10 novels and a memoir. He is number 17 on the American Film Institute's list of greatest male screen legends of classic Hollywood cinema, the highest-ranking living person on the list until his death. After barely surviving a helicopter crash in 1991 and then suffering a stroke in 1996, he focused on renewing his spiritual and religious life. He lived with his second wife of 65 years, Ann Bidens, a producer, until his death at the age of 103.
Wow. That's a good run, man.
Douglas was born Danilovich, Yiddish, in Amsterdam, New York, the son of Berna, pronounced Bertha, and Herschel Harry Danilovich. His parents were Jewish immigrants from the Chavi Mogilev region of the Russian Empire, present-day Belarus, and the family spoke Yiddish at home. His father's brother, who immigrated earlier, used the name Dembski, which Douglas's family adopted in the United States. He grew up Izzy Dembski and legally changed his name to Kirk Douglas before entering the United States Navy during World War II.
Wow.
Listen to this. He writes this about his father. My father, who had been a horse trader in Russia, got himself a horse and a wagon and became a rag man, buying old rags, pieces of metal, and junk for pennies, nickels, and dimes. Even on Eagle Street, in the poorest section of town, where all families were struggling, the rag man was on the lowest rung of the ladder, and I was the rag man's son.
Wow.
Yeah. I love this kind of stuff. You know, when you
isn't it fascinating?
Yeah, you know
how they start out like that.
Well, how they get to the country.
Look how they end up.
How they get to the country and then what he becomes. He joined the United States Navy in 1941, shortly after the United States entered World War II, where he served as a communications officer in anti-submarine warfare. He was medically discharged in 1994 for war injuries sustained in the accidental dropping of a depth charge. After the war, Douglas returned to New York City and found work in radio, theater, and commercials. So, he's one of those guys, married, you know, twice in his life. Second time, I thought it was second time for 65 years.
65 years. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, I do remember the helicopter crash. And Kirk Douglas. So, I did not get a chance to eat too much good food in Las Vegas.
No kidding. Where did you stay?
I stayed right across from their training center, so it wasn't on the strip. So it was off the strip at a hotel called the Orleans.
And, oh, I know. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, Neil Sedaka is going to be there this weekend in case you want to go. And but I did, you know,
Neil Sedaka aided Sanders.
Did he?
He was in for two concerts at the Chester Fritz, two nights in a row, and somebody brought him in, and after a cocktail party, and then skipped the cocktail party the second night and came in eight before the show, and sat up at the bar both nights and just had a great time. I had all his music on playing cassettes.
Neil Sedaka. Ooh, I hear Laughter in the Rain.
Yeah.
Yeah. The I'd start working at I started actually presenting at 8:30 in the morning, and I'd do it like I probably had like 15 minutes between every event, and so I talked like for 10 hours a day for 3 days. So
Jeez, way to go. You didn't have much time to eat anything.
Well, no, but I mean, I wouldn't eat during the day. I mean, I'd have something to eat for breakfast, and then I wouldn't eat again till night. But, you know, let me just tell you, when I do that, it is not hard to get, you know, excited about it. It is not hard to get motivated to do it, because simply it is the coolest job on the planet. And, you know, especially for people that, you know, live either in the darkness or near the darkness, or have family members that do that. I mean, they are absolutely riveted, because it all speaks to them. It's the truth. Yeah. So it didn't bother me, but the, I had salmon one night. In the hotel, I didn't really feel like going very far. And then the next night, I didn't even know what I did. What did I do the next night? I'm trying to remember. Oh, I think I went to Outback Steakhouse. After I left Outback Steakhouse, I kind of got intrigued with the science behind the Bloomin' Onion. And I was like,
yeah.
How do they do that? I mean, first of all, the onions are gigantic.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what kind
of... Well, there's a piece of equipment that they push down on the onion. It's got two handles and all these razor-sharp edges, and they push it down on the onion. They peel the bottom, and so it sits level. And they push not all the way through, so it blooms. It, like, pops up. And then they dip it in a batter. And then they deep fry. That's how they do it.
Yeah.
I think they're great. I love them.
It's too much, though. I mean, you know.
You can't eat a whole fucking Bloomin' Onion. My God, no.
The things are cool.
That's enough for four or five people.
It is. It is. The, you know, and the other thing is I have, I don't want to say an irrational loyalty, but they came to Afghanistan when I was there. Outback Steakhouse did. Came to where I was in Afghanistan, and they fucking fed a steak, and I don't know if they made Bloomin' Onions. I don't think so, but a steak and potatoes and I don't know what kind of vegetable. It was some kind of vegetable. And yeah. And I mean, it's like I never saw any other restaurant come the fuck over there or come to Iraq to feed us.
That's pretty bold.
Yeah, and Kim, when I say feed us, I meant they fed thousands of guys. Thousands of guys. And so to me, man, whenever I have a chance to go to Outback Steakhouse, I'm like, I'll go. But I started watching that. And how do you make sure something in a deep fryer does that stuff fry evenly in the deep fryer?
Well, yeah, it's like onion rings. That batter sticks on there and it gets in the crevices of all, you know, that onion just opens up. to where the batter, and the batter can't be too thick, otherwise it won't penetrate down towards the core of the onion. And I don't know, I've never seen it made. I've only eaten them and seen it come to the table, and they must just sit it in one at a time in some kind of contraption. Well, it probably sinks right to the bottom, you know, because it's got so much batter on it. And then, you know, they pull it up and it's done. Probably about 3 minutes or so. Couldn't be much longer than 3 or 4 minutes. And yes, those are big suckers.
No, they're those they're onions. Yeah, they're huge, man.
And, over a pound each.
And, you know, let me tell you, the problem with them is that, you know, they, you know, and like most stuff that you can get at decent restaurants is, it tastes good. The sauces they have with that blooming onion, I mean, they've got a little kick to it. They taste great.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you go, and in fact, I was talking about this, you know, I prefer the European style of dining.
Smaller portions.
Yeah. That's much preferred because, you know, you get that blooming onion and then bread. And now the entree is going to come and you're not even hungry anymore.
And you can't eat anything. I mean, you're so full. That blooming onion, we were at, what the hell was it? The Texas Roadhouse. And my brother-in-law orders a blooming onion. And the sucker comes out. And I went, holy mackerel, look at the size of that. And we ate, my wife had one petal and said, oh, God, I'm going to get a headache from the batter. And John and I ate about a little more than a third of it. And because I knew what was coming. And we took the rest of it home to his son's house. And his grandson ate the rest of the whole goddamn thing. Just, you know, he's, 16? He plowed right through it, man. He threw it in the microwave, heated it up, and then just devoured it. I just watched. Listen, man, you're butch.
And hungry.
Well, Uncle Kim, that was good. Yeah, I know, but it's a lot.
But no, my preferred style of eating is, you know, and I never like got it when I was like, why those small portions and why so many courses? Yeah. But to me, you know, you have to be a little bit disciplined because they serve too much food and it's all good.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing.
It is all good, but it's more fun to have a little bit of everything.
Well, to include
in smaller portions,
I would tell you, in my opinion, to include.
You know, give me four or five courses with, you know, a few bites each.
To include,
except
you know,
when you get to the steak or the lobster.
To include a little dessert, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, a wee dessert.
Yeah,
like a creme caramel.
A little bit of cheese.
I'm thinking of a dessert that I'm for Hal's new steakhouse. And I'm thinking of a panna cotta, which is like a creme caramel, but it's made with half and half instead of cream and no egg yolks, no egg whatsoever. And it's a much lighter dessert and not as rich with the egg yolks like a creme caramel.
But, I don't know, man.
I'll have it when you come next time. I'll have one for you.
Colleen took me to task the other day saying that you always ate the creme caramel. I can't believe you said that we used to eat it all. I said, why are you?
Dude, that's pretty close to the truth.
Why are you eavesdropping on my conversation, Colleen? And I said, no. If you remember, we would get two, one for you guys to share and one for me to eat. That I would share after I had two bucks. Well, you have to, man. No, once you have a bunch of kids, man, if they like to eat good food, that's not a good thing for you as a father.
And your children aren't shy of eating.
No, well, no, I mean.
And when I'd put food down, I'd just step away from the table, sir.
Well, no, I mean, they grew up.
Watch the forks fly.
They grew up. But, no, they grew up. They grew up.
I love feeding people who like to eat.
Well, and they like to. They like to. Food. They like.
I just loved it.
They like to eat at your joint, and which was always a treat.
Yeah, I sure loved it.
Yeah, and so yeah, you could. And they, you know, they that was their that was their favorite place to eat, and it was their favorite food, which was my problem. The and then Colleen was laughing. Kim, you know, on a not too irregular occasion would buy us dinner. And then what I would normally do is I would write a check for the dinner and leave it as a tip.
Yeah.
And my son John comes home. I'd done that a couple times. He goes, Dad, he goes, I got to tell you something. I said, what? He said, you're one of the most welcome guys that comes into Sanders. I said, really? He said, that little trick you do? He said, a lot of people like seeing you come through the door. But, right? Because, I mean, look, Kim's place wasn't a cheap place to eat. It wasn't uber expensive, but it wasn't cheap. And then there would always be five of us, six of us going down there, you know, something like that. Right. And so, you know, if Kim would pick up the tab over $100, I would write the check and they'd throw it in the tip jar. They'd throw it in the tip jar. Right. And John would be like, Dad, you need to come down more often, bro. I'm like, that ain't. Oh, man.
Well, you know how I feel about you and your family. It's something special.
Well,
I love buying you guys dinner. It just and I owned the restaurant because I like people and I like to entertain, and not necessarily did I like to make a lot of money. that wasn't my goal.
Wasn't your thing?
Otherwise, I would have bought a McDonald's franchise.
Are you a Vegas guy?
I play a little blackjack. I usually play the quarter slots or the dollar slots.
Right.
And I like the shows. Beth and I love the shows. The Cirque du Soleil stuff is pretty cool. Bob Zaney, when he's in Vegas, I've seen him a couple of times.
Where do you have a place that you stay? Do you have things you'd like to do?
We've stayed at Rio. We've stayed at Treasure Island. We've stayed at Caesar's Palace.
I like Caesar's Palace.
Caesar's is the bomb.
It is the bomb.
Just
man.
The bomb. And the Bellagio.
The Bellagio.
We stayed there once. Good restaurants there. They've got a buffet that's just unfreaking believable. It ain't cheap, but it's pretty spectacular. We used to stay at Green Valley Ranch. We went there a couple times in a row, and it's in Henderson. And you look over, it's up on the hill in Henderson, and it overlooks the whole strip. And we were
in Green Valley Ranch. This must have been 10 years ago, during a 4th of July, and watching all the fireworks go off on all the buildings on the strip. And also, they had a big fireworks display. It was their 25th anniversary or something like that. So it was cool. And it was, we liked it because they had good restaurants. They had a movie theater, like a 10-plex in the hotel. And then just outside, you walk across the street, and there was a pedestrian street with shops on both sides for about 2 or 3 blocks. And there was a lot to do. And just right around there, and I loved the pool. They had a beach entry pool, and we would get once in a while, we'd get a cabana for a day and just style it. And that was fun. But
I'm not much of a Vegas guy, and I've stayed and so throw out names of restaurants and stuff like that, and I don't really know. I just wondered if you had anything by name that, you know, when I go, we always go here. I wanted to go see the Beatles thing at Cirque du Soleil.
Love. You've got to see that.
Have you seen it?
Yes, it's spectacular.
Yeah, the tickets were a little pricey on a Wednesday night.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, really? Did the man
Cirque du Soleil? Anything they do?
Yeah.
Oh, at the Bellagio, where it's a water thing, but Love is all the Beatles songs and how they do it, and it's just very cool. And I stayed.
It's one of the few things the Beatles have ever, right, authorized to be done like that, right? If I'm not mistaken, I remember the headline I saw, Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr came to the premiere and had helped in the production, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of what.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, they did that. So I looked at that, but I was. Honestly, I was too busy. It was a thought, but
you want to take your time and do that. But I had a friend, I still do. He's in Minnesota running a resort. But I went out there for a food show, Cisco. I had a free ticket. They put me up at the Treasure Island.
Ooh.
But I went out about 4 days earlier and stayed with him. He was the executive chef at Excalibur.
Ooh.
And he comped everything. Comped my room, my food. I ate, they had like 12 restaurants. I think I ate about 10 of them. And then I went to a couple of food shows out there. Cisco put on, and then I saw Terry Bradshaw open for Jay Leno, and that was pretty cool. That was fun. But I like you, flying into McCarran Airport is a zoo.
I've never flown in there.
Too many people, if you're tunned up, you got lots of money, you can. I wasn't a fan. Beth and I weren't a fan of those clubs where everybody's dancing and going crazy. It passed me by. I'm too old for that shit. I love some of the music, but of course, I definitely would go see J-Lo. See her show. She was great halftime, by the way.
I didn't see that. I didn't see halftime.
Oh, God. Shakira. I didn't know the female anatomy could move that way.
Oh, she's a talented girl. Well, you know, it's her mother's Egyptian. That's where that's where that comes from. I mean, so it's the whole belly dancing thing, I think.
She had more moves than a slinky.
Oh my god, she's like so, I remember
never saw anything like it in my life.
I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, who is that? And then I'll tell you one of the funniest things I've ever seen relative to Shakur was it was the NHL All-Star game. And they were doing a version of like this or that, and they were talking to these guys, and like, you know, they said, so these are guys playing the NHL All-Star game, and I remember one of them was Mike Modano, and it was Christina Aguilera or Shakira. So they're like, they cut to the shot. You know, here's Mike Modano, who played for the Dallas Stars. He's a pretty good hockey player during his day. And they're like, okay, this or that, Christina Aguilera or Shakira. And they're like, Shakira. And then they cut to the next guy, Shakira. It was hilarious.
There's no competition with her.
No, no. But like I said, her mom, she's Colombian.
J-Lo is 50.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, well, no, they're like, they're not like the rest of the girls, though. They're like pretty talented, pretty unique women. But yeah, she's from Colombia. Her mom moved to Colombia from Egypt or something like that. And so, yeah, they do that stuff in Egypt. They do that stuff in Egypt. Talk to me about, what was the other thing? I was going to ask you a cooking question. Relative to salmon and cedar planking. Is cedar the only thing that people cook on? Somebody asked me a question like that to ask you.
Well, I guess you can do oak plank or whatever you want.
What's the point? What does the wood do for the fish?
Well, cedar, you know, you've cut cedar before, that smell.
Right.
And what you do with cedar is you have to soak it in water for at least a half an hour.
Right.
And so it doesn't burn. And then you get a smoky cedar flavor. And that's the key to the highway is when you have cedar planking. And, all you need is something like a cedar shingle. You don't need a big, huge plank.
Got it. They sell those shingles in, you know.
I got mine at Lowell's.
Yeah, I was thinking of grilling places you can get them.
Or I'd get them a quarter inch or half inch plank, cedar plank, and then I'd cut them into 3-foot sections. And then I could put a whole side of salmon in there, and then I'd put them in the oven. You know, you season them in oil and put your seasoning on it, maybe some thinly sliced lemon on top of the cedar, and then you put them in the oven, and they kind of smoke and cook that way, and they're delicious, but you have to soak them in water for at least 30 minutes.
Got it.
The planks. And then you got something that's pretty tasty. It's definitely different.
But it's the smoke flavor that we're talking about.
That's what you want.
Got it.
Yeah, you don't want that burnt flavor.
Got it.
You want smoky flavor.
I made the mistake of not soaking them.
That water eats the steam and then smokes this plank.
I made that mistake once of not soaking the plank thoroughly enough.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, how the hell do you do this, man? Yeah. With experience comes wisdom.
Yes, it does.
The other thing I have to tell you is, like, Vegas on TV and the Vegas I see when I go there are very different. Okay.
Yes.
First of all, people especially men. I mean, can you not match your clothes, for God's sake? Like, what are you guys doing? Like, how, like, are you like, it's like going to the county fair. Like, where do these people come from? It's an it's a little bit humbling. These people are are all humans. We've got a problem. Yeah. Vegas, a little bit of a shit show. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. That's why I don't think we've been there in 10 years.
Really?
Maybe.
Well, and let me tell you, it was cold. It was cold. It was freezing cold. And when I got there, it was raining. No, the temperature dropped and the wind was.
Oh, I've been there when it's.
Oh my God! I'm rolling my suitcase. I got a coat in my hand and I got my head down, leaning into the wind. And I'm not going. I'm making no progress. I'm like, this desert bullshit weather, man. I'm not ready for it. So, I was
nothing
like
worse than wind in the desert, boy.
Well, I mean, the desert gets crazy like that, right? You know, you get those.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway, so, it was it was like your best coat weather, like heavy coat the last 3 days. Today, it wasn't as bad, but up until today, yeah. You get your good coat on, your heavy coat. Have it buttoned up, no bullshit coat.
Yeah.
It's been cold here on the West Coast. In 29 Palms, either this morning or yesterday morning, it was 33 degrees.
Whoa.
Yeah. Hello. What's that about?
Whoa, that's some old shit.
Yeah, and the California high desert, man. Come on, now, what's up with that? I got another email after we were talking about hors d'oeuvres, and you said your favorite hors d'oeuvre was crab cakes that you used to make.
Yes,
we've talked about shrimp as well. Do you want to explain your lavash to everybody?
Okay. Yeah, I sure do. Lavash is a cracker bread. It's an Armenian cracker bread. And they come from small as 6-inch rounds up to 16-inch rounds. And we used to do a lavash with a 16-inch round. and I would take diced tomatoes. They're seeded and the pulp is out. You just have the tomato diced up in about 1/4-inch chunks. And then you sprinkle those over the lavash. You don't add too much stuff. And I would take ground beef and brown it off with my prairie sauce, which was what I used on the salmon, a sauce that I invented for the salmon, a little sweet with some heat. And kind of like a teriyaki, it had honey, it had soy or Worcestershire, I mean, that kind of flavor. And I cooked the ground beef and put a little bit of this in for flavoring. And then I sprinkle the ground beef on there. And then thinly sliced onions and roasted red peppers, some mushrooms. And then I would put Havarti cheese, thinly sliced Havarti cheese, and only one slice at a time. And I mean, you know, I wouldn't stack them up. I'd just side by side until the whole thing was covered. And I would go right to the edge with all my stuff. And the cheese is the last. And then I had a big pizza trays, big round 16-inch pizza trays. that I'd build this lavash on. I'd throw it in a 350-degree oven for about, I would say, the cheese melts in about 3-4 minutes. And you pull it out, and then I'd take and cut squares. Well, you know how you cut a pizza either in slices or squares.
Right.
And I'd cut them in squares. And you, the reason I did that is because by the time you got to the center, you still had a crunch in the cracker. You know how a pizza, if you have too much stuff on it,
right,
the crust gets soggy.
Right.
And it, for me, it sucks. and so I like a little crunch to the Armenian cracker. and they're delicious. And you can buy these in grocery stores, should be everywhere. And it's a very inexpensive, very cool way to make a little pizza at home. And like, you can throw shrimp on there or crab, you know, seafood, or cook off some bacon and crumple it up and throw bacon on top.
But
the
your
key is not to put too much stuff on there.
Okay, your admonition is not too much stuff, because you want the crust, the cracker, to be crisp
all the way.
Got it.
Through every piece. Yep, that's it. And like, the reason I took the tomatoes, you know, they heat up, you know, and you have that texture of a tomato that's cooked, but it's not mushy. And it doesn't soak into the cracker. It's, you know, whatever your imagination is, just don't put too much stuff on it. You know, because you want to taste everything, you know, including the cracker.
No, I mean, it was, it's, I, what I liked about lavash is that it's kind of a light appetizer.
Yeah,
we were talking about appetizers and how heavy they can be and whatnot. But no, I mean, it's a light appetizer, and so it was and I'd never had it before. I'd never even heard of it. Like, well, lavash, what is that?
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
It was another family favorite.
It was, and we used to sell a ton of those after the hockey games late night.
Of course, it's pizza, right?
Yeah, it's pizza. So, but lighter than pizza, not heavy.
Yeah.
And a 16-inch would easily feed 6 people after a hockey game, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we charged something like, what, $14 for it? It was cheap.
That was good.
It was goddamn cheap. Good.
And they
very
go down,
good.
They go down quick because it's light, right? And you don't take one little piece, man. You like take about 3 or 4 of them.
No.
Yeah. And you're back in a couple minutes.
Three to six slices per person.
Yeah.
In about 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. It goes quick. It goes quick. Yeah,
it does.
Now, I'm trying to think. There was no dipping sauces with the lavash, right? It was just
no, there weren't. But you certainly use like a ranch to dip if you wanted to.
If you wanted to,
you know, if you wanted to.
All right, now are you are you ready for? You didn't sound like you're ready for. You didn't sound like you were up on your Dodger news. So football over, baseball, pitchers, catchers report next
week.
Well,
I'll get into baseball. Pitchers and catchers come next month,
middle of
next month.
No.
So,
bro,
I'll be ready for
bro.
LA Talkie.
They come. Pitchers and catchers report next week.
Is it next week already?
Yes.
Oh, it is February, isn't it? I was still in January, man. That's where I am.
Yeah, next week.
Mea culpa, baby. I'm sorry.
Next week, Mayo.
Yeah, wow. Good. Yeah. I'm just following our hockey team, our college hockey team.
Yeah,
right
what's
now.
up with them struggling all of a sudden?
What are they struggling? They're number one in the country, for fuck's sake.
No, they're not. They got beat.
Yeah, they are.
They got beat by Duluth last time I watched them.
They got College last weekend. They split with Duluth.
Oh, they beat them. They beat them on Saturday.
They fell to number two for 1 week, and then after last weekend, they got kicked up to number one again.
No kidding. And, you know, I've seen
them. Don't be trash talking, my boys.
The last two times I've watched them, they've got beat. They got beat. Actually, they got tied by Miami, and then after that, they got. And then I watched them get beat by Duluth.
Yeah, they got spanked by Duluth.
Yeah,
pretty bad.
Spanked. I was like, damn. What's going on? Number one in the nation, University of North Dakota, 21-3-3. Number two is Cornell. Yeah. Number two is Cornell at 15-2-4. I'm not sure that that's legit. Number three, Minnesota State Mankato, home of the public birthplace of post-traumatic winning. Number four is Boston College, where post-traumatic winning is going to head in April and again, hopefully, in November. Number seven is Denver. Number eight is University of Massachusetts. Number nine, Penn State. 10, Providence. 11 is Arizona State, if you can believe that.
How about that?
Yeah. Number 12 is Northeastern. Number 13, Ohio State. 14, UMass Lowell. 15, Northern Michigan. 16, Quinnipiac. 17, Harvard. 18, Bemidji State. 19, Michigan State. And 20, Sacred Heart. I don't see. Did I mention Colorado College? They're not in the top 20, yo.
No, they got. We swept them last week. And now, next week, not this Friday and Saturday, but the following Friday and Saturday, we play Denver here.
Ooh, that's a big one.
And I'll remind you again next week, but they're on CBS on Friday night.
Kim always reminds me. On CBS.
Yep.
All right, my friend. All right, Kim, have a great weekend.
You have a wonderful weekend. And are we on the air next week? Next Friday?
If we're both still alive, I think we are. Any reason we would not be?
Okay, well, you've got a busy schedule, man.
Oh. And, I appreciate that.
And this is part of my therapy, talking with you on the radio.
Well, I'll make sure we get your therapy done, so don't worry about it.
I know you will.
All right, bud.
You always take care of Big Daddy here.
There you go. I love it as much as you do. All right, Kim, thanks for the visit.
Thank you. You take care, and thank you, Marines everywhere.
There you have it. All right, more of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.